Well, good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder, and this is BRN AM for Friday, October 23rd, 2020. And our top stories today, credit scores are still rising despite the crisis, and baby boomers may run out of savings. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Devin Banerjee. He's Senior Financial Services Editor for LinkedIn, and he's also the editor of the This Week in Finance newsletter, which you can find on the LinkedIn platform. Devin, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Absolutely, Jeff. Always good to chat.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots going on the LinkedIn platform. One story I think you wanted to talk about were credit scores on the rise.
Yeah, it's a really confounding trend, Jeff. You and I have been spending the past several months talking about the scale of this economic downturn, the scope of unemployment, in the United States, so many record numbers and bad negative numbers. But at the same time, we're seeing average credit scores rising. Now, first off, a lot of credit to the Wall Street Journal, which did a really good deep dive on the subject. That's the story we featured at the top of the LinkedIn feed this week and saw a lot of great LinkedIn member commentary around. So the average FICO credit score, Jeff, in July was about 711. That was up from 708 in April as the pandemic was getting worse and the economic recession was worsening. And that 711 in July was up from 706 a year earlier. And trends indicate that that July figure has held pretty steady through to mid-October. Not really changing. You know, that actually puts it at the highest average since FICO began keeping track of these monthly averages since 2005. So we're talking about the highest average credit scores in a time since 2005 of one of the worst absolute economic downturns in that time period. So what is going on here? The answer is something else you and I have been talking about quite a bit. So these really tie a couple of big trends together, which is this unprecedented financial assistance from both the government and from lenders as well. So from the government, we had the stimulus payments, those $1,200 checks. We had the very important expanded UI or unemployment insurance benefits, which helped borrowers keep up with their bills and also helped them pay down debt, pay down principal. That's been one of the most interesting trends we've seen from that that government stimulus aid is that the recipients are actually putting it toward paying down that credit card debt and other debt. Then we also saw the action from lenders, which you and I spoke about right at the start of this pandemic. Lenders were, you know, the financial system, including lenders, were very quick to act this time around when they were not the main culprit of the downturn like 12 years ago. But we saw them very quickly implement those payment holidays on mortgages, on auto loans, on student loans. That freed up funds for customers and kept credit reports quite clean. They successfully lobbied Congress, and Congress easily agreed that those payment holidays would not be included in credit reports. So, look, of course, this is good news to have high credit scores and healthy consumer credit. But it comes with implications and complications, especially for lenders as they try to assess borrower risk, right? I mean, yeah. they have these underwriting models, and typically, you know, a big factor is credit scores. And if those are kind of artificially, quote unquote, inflated because of temporary factors, that can complicate the process. So, you know, in the last downturn, we saw loan delinquencies rise quite in lockstep pretty much with unemployment. Of course, as I just laid out, we're not seeing that this time. And so that is affecting these underwriting models. As I said, we're seeing some borrowers, some banks starting to, you know, trim credit lines, raise underwriting standards, closing some dormant credit card accounts altogether. Because they're concerned that as this aid expires and runs out, customers will start reaching for those dormant credit card accounts. We're also seeing some of the big banks trying to add additional factors to their underwriting models, especially real-time income and real-time cash flow data. That has been a big push from some of the banks just to make these models more robust for themselves.
Well, Devin, I mean, obviously there's a lot of data to be gleaned here from not only FICO, but the other credit agencies as well. And it just stands to reason. Oh, first, I agree. It's great that credit scores are rising. But at the flip side, you know, if you're using that as a benchmark, if you're using credit scores as a benchmark to lend, I would be concerned about people expanding their spending if you said, as you said, if the stimulus packages dry up. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is not directly tied to FICO scores, but I read a story this morning that said that most people have gotten their holiday shopping done this month. They got it done with Prime Day and some other sales. I wonder how that may tie into credit scores. If people are like, okay, I'm going to do my holiday shopping, I'm going to do it now, keeping things, you know, back. I mean, does that actually hurt retailers, but also what does this mean for credit scores and spending?
Yeah, it's certainly just an acceleration of the seasonal spending. We have featured a couple stories on the platform in the past few weeks, especially around Prime Day and what the implications have been for retailers selling on the Amazon platform that say they did not have enough notice that Prime Day was being moved up. So there are all of those implications. Yeah. And in terms of consumer credit, you know, I think as that assistance maybe is still in their pockets and in their wallets, that assistance from governments, from lenders, perhaps they felt okay or more okay spending for the holidays than they would in November or December. So we will see how that plays out. But, you know, overall, I would say despite these concerns from lenders that I talked about, et cetera, a real standout takeaway of the past couple months, Jeff, which you and I have touched on, and I touched on just a couple minutes ago, but I just want to emphasize, is that there is this evidence that Americans are giving priority to paying down debt during this pandemic. And that was, to many people, quite surprising. As that aid came in, there was a survey done by the Federal Reserve over the summer, which found that those who got stimulus payments used about 35% of those funds to pay down principal, pay down their debt. And so they are prioritizing the right things in many people's minds.
Absolutely. And the other thing I'll say is that this may not be indicative, Devin, of emergency savings. And that's something we have also talked about on this program with you and others, that you know, one of the key lessons here is not only pay down your debts, which I applaud Americans. I mean, we have $1.6 trillion in student loan debt. By all accounts, that's being paid off. But in credit card debt was through the roof. But also the need to put money away for a rainy day like we just went through. And I think this is was a clear signal. It'll be interesting to see if we have get any information on that, because I can kind of see these things kind of running parallel with each other.
That's absolutely right. And also running parallel is just the waiting and seeing for additional fiscal stimulus. We see the real positive benefits of what temporary stimulus can do during a very difficult time of high unemployment. And so if stimulus is not renewed or not renewed to the extent that is appropriate or that people hope will happen, then we may see all of these things we're talking about start rolling over, those credit scores, the ability to pay down debt, the ability to put away money for savings or long-term savings for retirement, which we're going to get into in the next segment. So a lot does hinge, given the level of unemployment right now in this country, a lot does hinge on additional stimulus, which hinges on these lawmakers coming together, which so far they say they're doing, they say they're talking, but no real action yet.
Yeah, action is important in this case. Well, Devin, as you said, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, baby boomers may run out of savings in retirement. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here, and if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. We're talking to Devin Banerjee of LinkedIn. Devin, thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
Absolutely, Jeff. Happy to.
So from credit ratings and credit scores, now we're going to shift to boomers potentially running out of savings. This is scary to me, Devin. We've talked about people not saving enough, but also outliving your savings, which is a big issue for many in our industry.
That's right, Jeff. This is a real confluence of several trends in the retirement space coming together in this survey. It's Charles Schwab's Modern Retirement Survey. We always take a look at the findings of this and check out what LinkedIn members have to say about it. And importantly, it's also October, Jeff, which you know is National Retirement Security Month, so an important time to talk about these topics. Let's start with the high-level takeaways. I should note that this survey from Schwab, the participants, the respondents, are those who have at least $100,000 in investable assets. So the finding is that on average, Americans in this group have saved about $920,000 for retirement. That sounds like a lot, but also in the survey, respondents are saying they want about, or they say they need about $135,000 a year in order to live what they call their best life or their ideal life in retirement. Now you do the math on that, it shows at that spending rate, their retirement savings are going to last about 7 to 8 years. Now, of course, that is not enough for the length of retirement. So they're coming up short at that spending rate. We'll get into that in a second, but just a couple other takeaways. The average participant hopes to retire, and this range, by the way, of participants, I think was about age 55 to 75, so those approaching retirement and those about 10 years or so into retirement. The average hopes to retire at age 66. Most of them right now are more concerned, about 56% of them, more concerned about market volatility in their retirement savings than the ongoing health concerns of the pandemic, which was interesting. Only about 18% are really concerned about that. And another kind of interesting finding that I kind of laughed at, I'm not sure why, but about two-thirds of them, 65%, say they would rather spend their money in retirement than leave that money to their children. which I thought was interesting. So, Jeff, I want to just pull up a couple comments that we're seeing on this story on LinkedIn because I found them kind of interesting. Doug Wojcicki, who is a financial professional, says there are a lot of things that go into how much you need for retirement other than talking about a flat retirement savings number or anything like that. And there are elements for different people, like is your house paid off? Where do you live? You know, $920,000 goes a lot farther, he says, in Texas than some other areas in the South or the Midwest. Another important factor is what are your other income streams than savings? You know, there are company pensions or military retirement and Social Security, of course, really important. And then lifestyle practices. So that gets into that $135,000 in annual spending, which we saw a lot of members kind of pick apart. John Carlson says, he sees so many of his clients adjusting their spending as they go through retirement. So it's not like you set an annual level to spend and then keep that up, through retirement. Richard Hill agrees with that. He says the reality is that a lot of people overestimate, not underestimate, their expenses, in retirement. He says, sure, the first few years they spend a lot on hobbies and travel, but that tapers off as he's seen his clients enter their 70s and their 80s. So look, these surveys come out all the time, Jeff. As you know, a lot of different factors go into them. They're average numbers. We saw some members on LinkedIn point out that this group is going to include the millionaires and probably some billionaires among the respondents of a Charles Schwab survey. So that's going to skew the numbers as well. But I'm curious what you think, Jeff. As you said in your intro, you know, it's certainly a fact, I would say, and I think you agree, that people in general are not saving enough. So what do they need to keep in mind?
Well, I think number one, I don't know what the definition of your best life is, but maybe it's revisiting for all of us, in all seriousness, our expectations. Keep in mind, Devin, that, and I feel like I'm being interviewed now, but this is fine because you do this all the time as well. I feel like people need to really think about healthcare. You know, when I talk with my wife, I think about, you know, health is wealth, and that's kind of cliche and kind of corny. But it's true. Being healthy is the most important thing. If you don't have your health, you have nothing, and money cannot buy you good health. So understanding that your health expenses are going to go up. And then I think just setting expectations, Devin, you know, maybe it is unrealistic given that you're going to live till 90 or 95, depending on your generation, that you're going to have 25 or 30 years of retirement. It is unrealistic to think that you're going to sit dormant in those 30 years on a rocking chair. Maybe you'll climb, you know, you'll have some hobbies and things, but I think it's about setting expectations. And then lastly, for all of us, understanding your budgetary concerns and what they could be in the future. So you mentioned mortgage, rent, having a car, filling up gasoline. You know, I think those are important. And then I'll say one more thing. I actually like the concept of not leaving money to children. I like the fact that, you know, you earn the money. Maybe you can leave a little bit to them. You want to make sure that they're self-sufficient, but you've earned the money and you deserve to spend it down. And it's up to them. You've put them, hopefully put them in a position with the tools to be successful. So I that to me, philosophically, I really like, and you need to earn your way. And, you know, you don't just need to have things bequeathed to you, but that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, no, those are several great points. A couple more points I just want to raise from an interview I did earlier this week, Jeff, with David Hunt. He's the CEO of PGIM, one of the world's largest investment operations, $1.4 trillion under management. I should note that PGIM doesn't operate the defined contribution or defined benefit, any pension plans. But he, of course, he cares very much about retirement security. Three points from him. He says people need to remember that interest rates are very low right now. And that means the risk-free rate and the return, especially on their fixed income investments, is not going to be as high as it has been in the past. That means people need to be thinking about putting even more money away for retirement, especially younger professionals, but certainly relevant to all ages. The second thing that really concerns him is that 40 million Americans don't even have access to traditional, like 401k type retirement accounts. That's because they work for small businesses or they're individual contractors or freelancers. This is a topic you and I, Jeff, have spoken about a lot this year. There was some progress on that with the SECURE Act that went into effect in January of this year, but certainly a lot more progress needs to be made. And then a third point he made is he's a bit cautiously optimistic about that Department of Labor guidance which introduces the possibility of more private asset investments into plans like into defined contribution plans like 401ks. But he's cautiously optimistic, as I said. He says there could be some hair on that, and there needs to be a lot of research and diligence done into the risks of those types of investments. So a couple things to be optimistic about, one thing to be cautiously optimistic about, but certainly a very important conversation, especially this month, National Retirement Security Month, which I think, and I think you would agree, Jeff, should really be every month of the year.
Well, it is here on the network. So I'll tell you, every day for us is retirement savings, personal financial independence month and day. But Devin, all great topics. Really appreciate you coming on and giving us your perspective, and look forward, as always, to having you back on the podcast and back on the show again next week.
Sounds good, Jeff. Take care.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, check out today's edition of The Morning Pulse. Don't forget, we're back again tomorrow with our retrospective look back show, BRN Weekly. We've got a very special guest. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited, and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.